Welcome to Puro Politics, the political podcast of the San Antonio Express News. My name is Gilbert Garcia, opinion writer and columnist, and I'm joined by
Carrie Clack, columnist, editorial board.
Nancy Prayer Johnson, deputy editorial board editor.
Metro editor Greg Jefferson.
And we're recording this on Monday, April Fool's Day. And you know it's April Fool's Day because Councilman Manny Pelias has a video out in which he's talking about the problem in his district with a lack of sweet grass yield. So I just want to say to District 8, don't be fooled. He's punking you. And there is not a sweet grass problem in District 8. But we're going to talk about some serious things going on in San Antonio. And I mean, one of the, you know, there's so much going on in this election cycle, but I mean, one of the fascinating things I think concerns, the charter amendment process, because we're almost certainly going to have some, charter amendments on the November ballot in San Antonio. And, the Charter Review Commission, which, Mayor Ron Nuremberg reconstituted, last November, will submit their suggestions to city council probably in June. The council will vote to approve them and get them on the ballot. And Carrie, you went to, I think, the most recent public hearing on the charter amendments over at the Central Library a couple of weeks ago. What was your big takeaway from that?
I thought that evening, the two big issue news was the subcommittees wanting to end the tenure and any kind of limit of pay on the city manager. But for me, the biggest surprise was the decision not to expand city council districts. And it was something that I almost assumed that they would do it, but they made an excellent argument about why there's no need for it, because the average district is about 143,000. 20 years ago, each council district got maybe $100,000 per office. Now it's about $1 million. So they have the resources to cover constituent services. And more than any other elected office, city council in any city, the most important thing they do is constituent services. So because of the resources they have, there's no need to expand the district, in which also saves us the argument over how it would affect specifically District 2.
Yeah.
So, but they do leave themselves the option after every census to revisit the issue to see if we've gotten bigger and if there's going to be a need to maybe expand.
And that's you got to something which is, I think, is really kind of central to how they're handling this issue, which is that while there might have been some support for the idea of adding council districts, the hard part was going to be how are you going to cut up the ones that exist in District 2, which has been the city's lone African-American district over the years. And I mean, the demographics have been changing there for a while. Mm-hmm. And that would have been, I think, a particularly difficult one. I mean, was your sense, Greg, that I think at some point they're going to do this. They're going to add districts at some point. Was it just like, let's just punt this one for now?
I get the feeling there were probably a lot of factors involved. Not that the Charter Review Commission would take politics into consideration at all. But they might be saying, it's like, look, they already know they're going to be sending, one charter amendment related to the city manager, kind of stripping the city manager's salary cap and limit on his tenure. They're probably going to be, sending a recommendation to city council for a pay increase for the mayor and city council. Mm-hmm. See if they'll put that on the ballot. To then also add, an expanded council, then the expanding the number of council districts, that would be a huge ask for voters in November. And, we had just look back to Prop A. I mean, there were a lot of reasons. This was the last charter election. All kinds of political or criminal justice reforms, but it was overloaded. I mean, you had half a dozen, different proposals packed into that one thing, and it went down badly for a lot of reasons. But ballot fatigue was probably part of it. And I think council will want to avoid that heading into the fall.
Yeah, one of the things that they're also looking at, I think we're likely to have a vote on, is changing the length of the council terms. And so instead of being limited to four two-year terms. They would have four-year terms. They could do 2 4-year terms. And I think what they're kind of trying to work out now is how they want to do it, because there are three options. They could do it concurrently. Everybody is up for election every 4 years at the same time. You could stagger it. You could have half the council districts in one, half the other in the other, with a mayor in one of those. And then I think there's even been talk about maybe having the council elections in the same cycle, but then maybe the staggering the mayoral one. And I mean, I was curious what you thought about it, Nancy, because it seems like one issue you could have if you stagger them is that, you know, let's say you have the mayoral election one cycle, and then the next 2 years later, you don't. You're going to have a lot more voters in that one election where the mayor comes out. And it's kind of disproportionate. It's kind of maybe unfair to the other.
I think it would be confusing for voters too. Yeah. And, you know, it's hard to break tradition as well. And I think that there would be, I mean, you know, they're not the most informed of voters. We don't have many people who vote in the first place. I think I can see benefits to it, but I can also see some drawbacks there as well. You know, if there's someone really good in office and they're really representing the people and their constituents, versus if there's someone who's not doing the best job, right? And so I think, I don't know. I think the way it's working now currently is fine.
Would staggered terms, is that addressing a problem? If so, what's the problem?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure that it's so traumatic.
Seems that it would
elections every 2 years.
It would exacerbate
a
problem we do have is as Nancy just said, enough people not voting.
Yeah.
But
we'd probably save some money too if we just had them concurrently.
Yeah. And it's also an unfairness that if they're staggered and one is tied to the mayoral election and the other, which leads to the question, and I don't know the answer, if they're considering expanding this to the city council limits terms to 4 years. Were they also doing the same for the mayor? Why is that?
I think that's the idea. Yeah. At this point.
Well, it makes no sense. Yeah. If it's staggered doesn't make any sense.
I don't think so. Yeah. And I think the argument for the 4 year terms is just that it takes a little of the political pressure off of council members that, you know, when you get elected, you're probably already thinking about fundraising and the next election, particularly if you're in your first term. And this would just give council members a chance to relax a little bit in the job and learn the job.
Yeah, I think the pressure is good, though. It keeps them accountable. Mm-hmm. It keeps them, you know, why get so relaxed and laid back about it? Because your whole job is to represent the constituents. And if you're there to get comfortable, then the results may not be as good for the community. You
know? It's going to be really interesting to see how that plays out, how voters feel about that.
One thing that was interesting at the at the meeting at the library a couple of weeks ago was the I think I may have counted one person who spoke who was in support of raising city council pay. There's a lot of and most of these I think who have spoke against it I would label progressives.
Wow.
Well, that's really interesting. And I'm glad you brought that up, because what we're in the past when this issue has come up, and we had a 2015 election that increased council pay, but the pay was not indexed. So we've been stuck at the same pay level for the last 9 years. And that's one of the problems we have right now. But you primarily had people coming from the political right. Greg Brockhaus was a really outspoken, he was not yet on the council, I don't think, but he was a really outspoken critic of the idea of council pay. Now you're seeing people on the right and also some of the people on, you know, really ardent progressives who've been part of the criminal justice.
And along with that, it was the same.
Nanda Thomas, right?
And the same pushback against having the city manager's pay, you know, being competitive. So it was interesting hearing all these many progressive people speaking out, saying that, hey, it was settled in 2018 and echoing the Greg Brockhaus argument.
Progressives haven't really made out really well under city council. It's particularly under Ron Nuremberg. So that might have something to do.
Yeah, I think it's a little too far, though. I actually think increasing the pay is necessary. You know, if you're asking qualified candidates to come forward, people with experience, with skill to come forward, you need to pay them. Yeah. And this business of, you know, small town San Antonio, it's just, it's sad, you know, and I think, you know, when you look at Austin, you know, they make considerably more, right? In that study, I think it was like 100, was it 120, 125?
125.
And, you know, I mean, you can compare San Antonio's tacos to Austin, right? We have better tacos, but I feel like we should have just as good pay at city council, you know, and why not? Like, why keep us down there in like small town San Antonio?
I think the challenge politically, it depends on how strong the anti-council pay, you know, folks are in November. But, you know, in 2015, I think it was pretty easy to make the argument. Look, mm-hmm. they're getting, council members are getting a maximum of $1,000, right. $1,040 a year. Yeah. Mayor, $4,040.
Yeah.
And I think, and even then, that council pay amendment won with like 54.8% of the vote. Mm-hmm. And I think that one was much easier to make the case that we're just not paying these people at all.
Nothing, yeah.
Now, you know,
they're better. It is better.
It's better. And so yes. I think it's harder. I agree with you. I think they need to,
but it wasn't that long ago. When did Ana Sandoval, that wasn't that long ago. And she left because she had a baby she had to support. She had to pay childcare, and maybe she'd still be on the council. Maybe she'd be still sitting on the dais if she was getting paid more. I think she was pretty direct about that.
I do think this is one. It could be one of those. It's one of those issues of where you could have the left and the right meet, especially if. Yeah. And I don't think the recommendations that they go as high as 120.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that would.
That's like the highest.
Yeah, highest, yeah, yeah. The highest.
I mean, we should
level.
Probably, it would probably be useful just to kind of go through what the subcommittees yeah. of yeah. The Charter Review right. Commission Subcommittee on Salaries. So they're looking, they've taken all city department heads, including the police chief and fire. They've kind of found the median, and they're saying, okay, the council pay should be some X percentage mm-hmm. of the medium of these.
Like 39 to 65% yeah, of that.
Yeah. Exactly. So when we go to 65%, you know, that's where we get to 125 for council, and I think 140, over 140 for yeah. mayor.
Right.
And I think that's, you know, you're getting into commissioner's court, county
yeah,
commissioner's
court. Yeah, that ain't going to happen.
Yeah, that's going to be really tough. I mean, I think the only way that would happen is if you agreed to put ankle bracelets on the city councilman, just so you know where they are at all times. You know, they're
well,
on
that's
the dime.
A point. That's actually a good point, because that reminds me of Jalen McKee Rodriguez uh-huh. when he said that they should not be allowed jobs outside city council. Right.
Which is a little ironic, considering he's a part-time teacher.
Yeah. Well, but maybe because he needs to. Right.
The tough thing about that, I think, and I think that would work for many people who've been on the council. I mean, if you've got it, like you've got your own law practice, mm-hmm. can you shut it down completely yeah. for 4 years, 8 years?
Any business.
Yeah, yeah. And they don't. I mean, I think every lawyer on city council is a working lawyer.
Sure.
The thing is, like, you can look at commissioner's court, the same is mm-hmm. true there. And they're making, you know, geez, what are they making now? But
140,
140,
I think.
140. Yeah. I mean, Justin Rodriguez, he's still doing legal work. He's still doing bond work. Yeah. It doesn't, you know, that doesn't preclude a second job unless you write it into the charter amendment.
Yeah. When to move on to an issue which I think will certainly resonate for people in San Antonio. I mean, if you, as divided as this state has been politically in recent years, I think one of the few things that people have been able to agree on is that people pretty much love HEB. And
yes, HEB for president.
And now it's getting a little dicier because we had recently, weekend before last, we had four Texas counties, the Republican Party organizations in four Texas counties, passed resolutions denouncing Charles Butt, the chairman, 86-year-old chairman of HEB. Their objections are he has helped candidates who are pro public school and anti school voucher. He also was supportive of Harris County in 2020 when they decided to send mail-in ballots during the height of the pandemic, mm-hmm. Mail-in unsolicited mail ballots to all eligible voters. This is something that Ken Paxton, our attorney general, who we'll talk about in a minute, he fought in court and he thought of it as some kind of fraud. We've discussed in the past why just sending a ballot application to someone is not a there's really no way you could say that's fraud. But anyway, this is something that he was supportive of. And so the Republican Party had some issues with him. They've also, and this one is a mystery to me. I don't know if anybody's really explained that they've said that, HEB has supported or put on drag shows for children. Do you have any clue what in the world?
I don't.
I wasn't invited to that. I'm disappointed.
Me either.
This is not at my location.
So, I mean, the thing is, like, in every community HEB operates in, they're giving a lot of money to community groups. I mean, who knows what the genesis of that complaint is, but, you know, maybe they gave money for an event. Yeah. Maybe they were an event sponsor and there was some kind of
organization that does a lot of things and maybe had an event.
Who knows?
HEB is the people's, it's more than a store. It is a brand. It's a giant. And for the GOP to go after them, I think it's, and not to say that HEB can't do no wrong, but they do a lot of right. They really they do. Get it right.
I have complex feelings about HEB.
Do you?
Yeah. I mean, I keep thinking back to Winter Storm Uri.
Yeah.
Where, HEB, you know, it's like, they had their problems, but they stayed open.
Mm-hmm.
They served their community when every other level of government was failing, mm-hmm. particularly at the state level.
And people noticed. People were saying,
"Yeah, absolutely." Yeah, it's like, you know, it's almost like, hey, why don't you just hand over the running of state government to HEB?
Absolutely. I remember reading that.
I mean, you have to respect HEB as a corporation. They really have it down. I mean, they're, mm-hmm. you know, this is a grocery chain is an incredibly complex enterprise, mm-hmm. With all kinds of difficult logistics. They have their own, you know, manufacturing system, mm-hmm. and they pull it all together and they do it beautifully. I mean, they have relatively low prices. Their stores are, you know, well thought out, well stocked. Prices are good, and yet the part of me that has mm-hmm. this concern is their monopoly.
Yeah,
how
sure
they are.
Okay, yes.
I mean, that's the thing.
Yeah.
It's like it, particularly in San Antonio, where there's no real, you know. I mean, sure, you can go to Trader Joe's, whatever. Okay, but I mean, but we still, all know.
So is Apple. Look at all of our phones here. That's valid. However,
right.
What else besides the groceries that HEB does that, you know, and the corporate part of it is what they do in the community. And so, I mean, I've read just about every survey they do of teachers. Uh-huh. I've seen what they do. Every time there's a disaster, they're out there, they're frontline, right. They're handing out water, they're doing all the things. And not only are they there as a grocery store, but they are giving back to the community. They're studying the community. They're speaking up for what's right. They're speaking up for people and not just the richest people who can afford all the things with no problem, but the people who are scraping by and using Lone Star, you know, welfare cards to pay for their groceries. And I think that there's a lot to be admired there. And, you know, the GOP and this, all of this, of course, they're on their high horse right now and fighting them and pitting against HEB. But I hope that voters are looking at this for what it is. Of course, anybody who is not pro-voucher is on their list. And we've seen that in the last election, especially. Yeah. But here we are again.
Yeah, I'm going to be really curious. So this is starting at the county level. These are county GOP.
And it's something that the state Republican Party may take up.
That's right, right. I mean, these aren't big urban counties. These are
Harris is one, but the others aren't.
I stand corrected.
No, that the others.
I mean, I'm going to be curious. Does this even if it becomes a thing at the GOP convention? Yeah. Is this something that Ken Paxton, that Dan Patrick, that Greg Abbott?
Yeah.
Like, are they really going to go on a jihad against Charles Butt and HEB?
I see it happening.
I think it's possible.
And let's remember what this is about. This is about the fact that they describe Butt as Democratic billionaire and Democratic billionaires. This is about billionaires who don't comport to political views that people are used to billionaires, you know, going with. And Charles Butt has always been progressive, especially when it comes to education. And that's what this is about. He's
helped Republicans, though, too, are anti-voucher.
I believe their language is like interrupting, that it interrupted their, is that the word that they use, I believe? But I mean, okay, are the Democrats now going to go after the oil field? You know, the oil tycoons who were bankrolling.
Historically, Democrats have done that.
I mean,
but it's all about Butts politics and HEBs.
Yeah.
Or if they perceive it's HEBs politics. It's the same thing that happened. And this wasn't even about with corporations being progressive. But remember, what was it? Was it the, when different, corporations were saying they weren't going to come to Texas? Was after the voting, one of the voting suppression bills? So you had these, right. You know, it's
abortion too.
Abortion too. Yeah. So it's all about the politics of the Republican Party and not having billionaires go the way they're supposed to. They think that billionaires are supposed to vote. To go. And, kudos. That's the big criticism about HEB is that, cause I think Kroger's and Albertsons were also excellent stores. I miss them. I love my HEB, but that's the big criticism. But other than that, man, you got the charge.
And are they all going to stop shopping there? That is a good point.
What percentage of their population, some of the smaller counties or their populations work at HEB?
Right.
How much of the county's income is generated by HEB? Absolutely. It's easy to talk the stuff now.
HEB and schools. And this all goes back to school vouchers, mm-hmm. and the school is the biggest employer in all these rural places.
Mm-hmm. Well, we were talking about Ken Paxton, and last week, Ken Paxton spent most of his 9 years as a sex attorney general under indictment, and last week that finally got settled. He reached an agreement with special prosecutors in which he agreed to 100 hours of community service, $300,000 in restitution to the victims, and I think it's 15 hours of legal ethics education.
I'm still waiting.
I would love to attend those.
Well, yeah,
I mean, it's like. You know. Totally.
Who's going to teach? And what a huge job that is to teach him ethics.
Yeah.
He missed that class.
Good luck with that. No, I really, for any of our lawyer listeners out there mm-hmm. or viewers, I'm really curious about how you can have a plea deal without a plea. Right? Like he didn't, as far as I know, he didn't cop to anything.
That is a good point, yeah.
So what is this?
There's no admission of guilt at all.
No admission of guilt. And yet he's clearly, you know, agreed to penalties, but penalties for what? It's this weird kind of wordplay. I just don't understand it. Maybe some lawyer can explain it to me.
Yeah. He's still got a whistleblower lawsuit ahead of me. There's a, you know, possible there's a federal investigation that's going on that you know, we don't know how that's going to play out. But I think we've talked about it on the editorial board. We've certainly kind of all agreed. I think everyone who's watched this has said, you know, there's whatever issues we might have Ken Paxton, there's no doubt that he's kind of on a winning streak right now.
Yeah.
He was impeached by the Texas House last year, and he sailed through it in the Senate. He targeted his political enemies, both in the judicial system and the state legislature, and had success with that. And he's finally got this monkey off his back. So, what do we make of Ken Paxton, who I think has been, you know, there's overwhelming evidence, I think, that he's been one of the most ethically challenged state officials in the country for the last decade.
Look at him. You know,
those watching on YouTube, look at him.
He is on this winning streak, and it's not the charisma, not the smarts, it's not even political skill. And I saw somewhere last week where someone called him, you know, the Teflon Attorney General. Of course, you know, Reagan was known as the Teflon President, but with Reagan. The point of Teflon is the stuff wouldn't stick. Mm-hmm. The thing with Paxton, it sticks, but people don't care.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
It sticks and it smells, but the people who he's around the most, they don't care that he smells.
Yeah.
This is our guy.
Yeah, I mean, it's worth noting that his job approval rating is over 60% now.
He's well, and I mean, he's been challenged within his own party, and I think it's, you know, he's, the parallels between him and Donald Trump are obvious. Donald Trump is a big supporter of his, and vice versa. And, you know, this is, there is at least some evidence that the more legal jeopardy Trump finds himself in, the more trouble he gets himself in with the legal system, the more he benefits politically from
and to,
it.
And to be fair, on the other side, that same thing was with Bill Clinton when he was president. You know, as Moore came out about the scandal, his approval ratings got up, and Saturday Night Live, when Phil Hartman did a skit where after it was all over, he comes out as Clinton to the microphone and just says, "Next time, bring kryptonite." And that's basically where we're at. There's just some people like
rally behind him. Rally behind him.
Yeah, and,
I'm really curious about the community service.
What's he gonna do?
I think he should go to drag shows and pick up litter at drag shows or something. Maybe get exposed to people and see it's not the boogeyman that he portrays him to be. I mean, I don't know. I think it's silly. I think it's embarrassing. I mean, it's just.
I like to see him picking up trash.
You can't make this stuff up.
Trash on the highways.
Pick up trash on the highway.
I want to see one of those orange reflective picking up trash on the highways. I'd be good with that.
Yeah.
And go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, and keep in mind, I mean, one of the races that we covered in the state legislature, which involved Republican incumbent Steve Allison getting challenged by Mark LaHood from the right. Yeah. Mark LaHood. He was pro vouchers. That was a big part of his campaign. But a big issue for him too was the fact that he supported Ken Paxton. Yeah. He claimed that the impeachment process that the Texas House rushed into it. I mean, I think we all have talked about the fact that there was a committee that looked into the allegations against him over a period of months. But Mark LaHood argued that this process was rushed. And Steve Allison was supportive of the impeachment, and that was a big issue. So, you know, Ken Paxton was the winner in that.
I mean, in Ken Paxton, if he can keep the moment he's having,
if he can where does he go from here?
I mean, and he could be going straight. Could be going straight to John Cornyn in 2026. I mean, he's. You know, they get into fisticuffs on X fairly often.
It's actually Cornyn at his best is when he's right after that.
I mean, I can't remember what the provocation was from Paxton on X, but Cornyn's response was, "It's going to be whatever it was. It's going to be hard to do from a prison."
That's
like, he no longer has that, so that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's. Can Paxton maintain kind of this level of popularity for the next 2 years?
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, and against someone like Cornyn is kind of like an old school Republican who's been trying to kind of navigate this role for himself in Trump world, which I don't think he's particularly comfortable in, but he tries to kind of work within the strictures of the current Republican Party. To see the two of them against each other would be pretty fascinating. We're going to leave things there. I hope everyone's doing well, and we'll be back with you next week. Take care.